This is Coastside Conversations, and my guest today is Chelsea Carey, who is a soils ecologist working with Tomcat Ranch in regard to the prescribed burn. And we're going to talk today about her job in relation to that. We've been talking about prescribed burns on Tomcat Ranch, and we're trying to make sure everybody understands just the depth, the amount of research, work, knowledge that goes into having a prescribed burn. And we had a long conversation with Sarah Collamer about it, and that was a kind of an overview. Plus, it really showed us what CAL FIRE is going to be doing. But I wanted to talk to you. One of the things that Sarah brought up was that it benefits certain species like annuals or wildflowers. And then I know that your organization works with many different species, and you've been involved with this with Tomcat Ranch also. So why don't you just talk about your background with Tomcat Ranch and what you've been doing for them in general?
Yeah, sure. So I work for Point Blue Conservation Science, and we're a nonprofit based out of Petaluma, California. Some may know us, you know, formally as PRBO or Point Reyes Bird Observatory. And today we focus generally on all things climate smart conservation. I serve as the research director for our working lands group, and I'm actually a soil ecologist by training.
That actually brings up some interesting stuff, because I remember when we were first learning about the impact of the wildfires, how it had really burned the soil and how impossible it was going to be for it to come back. At least that was the impression we were getting in some areas. So that was a little scary to think about. And we're all hoping it does come back and start acting like normal soil.
Yeah. Yeah. The wildfires, they can definitely, create some effects below ground that we might not want, right? So like most conspicuously, I think, issues with erosion, right? So fires can create hydrophobic soil, so water can't infiltrate. So, you get these really, that's what led to, the mudslides, the landslides down south a couple of years back, because we had these fires down there followed by really big rain events.
In fact, yeah, I didn't realize how awful those mudslides were, the debris flows were, but evidently they were epic. And now they're like the example of what not to happen. But evidently it was just a confluence of very many things. The horribly hot fire immediately followed by a deluge of hard rain and the resulting debris flows or mudslides that came after that killed like 20 people or more. I mean, it was just a disaster, truly a catastrophe. And so people are extremely mindful of the dangers that mudslides pose. And we have had mudslides here before. After the 1998 floods, there was a big mudslide here in the canyon and also one in Loma Mar that went through a person's house and actually caused a fatality. So we are very, very aware of what that really means. Fortunately, though, so far, our soil seems to be recovering. We've had this great Goldilocks weather where the rain has been just enough to get things growing, not too much to cause any damage.
Yeah, that certainly helps. And, there's a many people may not recognize this, but there's a sort of a abundance of diversity of organisms below ground that mirror all of the diversity we see above ground, and so those critters can be influenced by these wildfires. And what's really kind of neat is that we've seen the community of people come together, researchers and community practitioners, trying to understand how we can help the below ground community recover in addition to, you know, the plants and animals we can see above ground in some really neat ways after these fires. And so, you know, that I think is sort of a hopeful, you know, sort of beacon to be able to look to.
Now, are you talking about mushrooms? Are you talking about worms? What are you talking about there?
Yeah. So, I mean, the one that comes to my mind are, yeah, sort of what we call as like mycoremediation or using mushrooms. So we know a lot of these organisms, these fungi and, you know, even bacteria, they can metabolize, you know, some of these compounds that might be left in the soil after burning of structures. So like hydrocarbons or heavy metals, things like that. So the introducing fungi can maybe help alleviate sort of those toxins that we've been seeing after some of these fires. Mm-hmm. You know, microorganisms and, you know, fungi and bacteria, they can help with soil aggregation. And so that can help the water to infiltrate better.
Does soil aggregation mean clumping? What does
it
mean?
How well the soil holds together. Exactly. Okay. It's like, it's sort of the structure of it. Does it have, you know, nice pores like in between the soil particles? Is it held together with glue in a way that it's not really compacted, but it's sort of, it's just held nicely together. Mm-hmm. And so these organisms can help with that. So there's been a number of different efforts to try to see if, you know, reintroduction of fungi and things like that can help facilitate that recovery after these wildfires we've seen.
Well, so far, I don't know of any recommended like amendments to the soil. I don't know if they're asking people to put mulch or anything. But getting to Tomcat Ranch, are you doing anything to the soil in preparation of the prescribed burn?
We're not doing anything to the soil in particular. We, you know, have been working with CAL FIRE to try to, you know, something that can be can create a little bit of destruction are these sort of how you create your fire breaks, right? So whether you use a bulldozer, that can obviously sort of scrape off some of that topsoil. It creates a level of disturbance that can be, you know, just it's a challenge to overcome sometimes. And so we've been exploring ways that we can create these fire breaks that are less destructive to soils and the vegetation on them, so that, you know, we're not doing this at Tomcat necessarily, but these are things that are sort of on our mind. So one example would be like a living break. So where you irrigate a pasture and create this sort of strip of irrigated pasture that would not burn.
And then one of the other things that I was concerned about was the marbled murrelet, but it turns out that is not a marbled murrelet flyway over there. Those poor birds have had all they can handle, I think, right now. But I'm wondering, what are the species that you're concerned about or looking into before prescribed burn? And what species do you think will benefit from it?
Yeah. So, you know, I have the pleasure of working with some really awesome, bird ecologists. And so, our work at Tomcat, we've been able to conduct bird surveys for the past 10 years, in standardized ways. So we have a really good sense of the bird community that's on that ranch. At these particular, places on the ranch where we'll be burning this winter and upcoming summer, there's about 30 species of birds that we've observed in the breeding season in those areas. And so they include scrub associated species like the spotted towhees or wren tits, California thrashers. And then we also have grassland shrub edge species like white-crowned sparrows.
White-crowned sparrows are everywhere here. You go to Año Nuevo, it's like you say hello to a million of them.
Yeah. And then in the more open grassland areas, something that's really, you know, kind of special about a lot of these habitats on the coast that are intact coastal prairies still is that they actually support some of the highest densities of grasshopper and savanna sparrows in the state. And we've been able to show that through some of our statewide monitoring. And so we're hoping that the burn will, you know, open up things a little bit and create additional habitat for, you know, the grasshopper and savanna sparrows that like open grasslands, and then also sort of create this or maintain this mosaic habitat that's already across tomcat so that we can continue to support such a high diversity of birds and other wildlife by supporting that mosaic habitat.
Wow, that's now when you say mosaic habitat, you mean it's just an integration of many different kinds of habitat, or it's at a point where there's a border and you have two different kinds. What do you mean by mosaic habitat?
Yeah, well, these areas that are you know, set to have prescribed fire are sort of at this like grassland shrub interface. So I think that that's one reason why these points have high bird diversity. But sort of when we broaden the our lens to look at tomcat more generally, there is this sort of really nice mosaic across the entire property as well, right? You have you know, around 40% is grasslands, but then you have 30% is coastal scrub, and you have some riparian areas and oak woodlands. And so all of these together, when you sort of look at that scale, right, the diversity in plants helps to foster diversity in wildlife, including birds.
And the place that the prescribed burn is going to occur, is that at a point, a junction of several different habitats? Is that the idea?
Yeah, in this particular case, one of the burn units is primarily scrub. So the one that we'll be doing this winter is it's, you know, it's got some orchard grass, so some non-native perennial grasses, other grassland plants, but it's a pasture that's dominated by scrub. So coyote brush, poison oak, and blackberry primarily. But when we look at this sort of but then this other burn unit that's on the docket for this summer is really this, it's a grassland with coyote brush encroachment. There's some Doug fir, and really it is in this area of the ranch that has sort of this interface of the scrub and the grassland. So I think another important thing to note about these you know, coastal prairies is sort of the presence of native perennial grasses, right? So we have, and it's something that helps to make them really special because they've been, you know, have had challenges in other places across the state competing with introduced annuals. And so, you know, we're lucky to have things like California oak grass and California broom, purple needle grass, which is the state's grass, and blue wild rye. And you know that these grasses, it's really special to have them on our landscapes. And at Tomcat, in certain places, we have, you know, up to 20% cover in certain pastures, which is quite a bit. And we've been able to sort of promote though the presence of these perennial grasses through careful management. And so when we started monitoring on the ranch in, you know, 2010, 2011, the ranch land and livestock team was also transitioning sort of how they manage the cattle. And they went from sort of set stock or continuous grazing to a planned, more rotational grazing approach. And what we saw was that from that time through now, the occurrence of perennial grasses went in 2011, they were found in 8 of 75 pastures, and now they're found in 70 of 75 pastures.
Awesome. My
Yeah, so
goodness.
it's been really, really cool. And you know, one of the and it's a goal of Tomcat continue to increase perennial grasses on the ranch. And the hope is, you know, that fire can be an additional tool to help facilitate habitat for these perennial grasses, and you know, and hopefully even help them compete a little bit with some of these annual grasses.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah, so we're hoping.
Yeah.
Yeah, go
I
ahead.
get it. So the prescribed burns could actually help the perennial grasses proliferate and reseed themselves and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's the hope, you know. And you know, there's a couple of ways that we can understand whether or not it's going to do that. And one is looking to the scientific literature, and there, you know, there is some context dependency. We don't always see that it happens, but in general, I think that there's enough reason to believe that perennial grasses will be promoted, at least some of these species, by fire, and that, you know, certainly just maintaining these open grassland habitats will provide the opportunity for these natives to continue to thrive with our grazing management and things like that. And so, you know, I just wanted to mention the perennial grasses, things like California oak grass, Danthonia californica. It's really important for these like grassland breeding birds. They like to hang out with Danthonia. So the savanna sparrow and the grasshopper sparrow, and perennial grasses are thought to help build soil health and sequester carbon more than sort of their annual counterparts. So from a below ground perspective, there's interest in sort of facilitating these perennials on the landscape as well.
Okay, and they sequester carbon because they take it out of the air and they put it into the soil somehow. I don't know how that works.
So all plants, right? So they're going to sequester carbon through photosynthesis. They're taking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and turning it into biomass, right? It's turning it into themselves, right? Creating their parts from it. And a lot of that carbon actually goes below ground to help build roots, but also to help plants push out some of that carbon as sugars. And they essentially feed the microbes in the soil so that all the microbes can do all the things that they do. And perennial grasses, they tend to have, this is sort of not blanketed, but in general, they tend to have deeper rooting systems. Mm-hmm. And by having sort of putting more energy into their rooting systems, having those roots go deeper than annual grasses, you're able to essentially take that carbon that's from the atmosphere and put it below ground where it can be stored and ultimately help to sort of draw down atmospheric carbon dioxide as one tiny tool in our whole toolkit to help mitigate climate change and rebuild soil organic matter and soil health.
Awesome. Okay. Well, that's a really important point. And yes, definitely. Thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I see. Yeah. Yeah. I've walked through Tomcat Ranch. It's just an amazing place. And you do go through these kind of riparian corridors and then out onto grassy hills, you know, oak savanna and then firs. It's really an amazing place. So I think it's awesome that prescribed burns can actually help habitat, including allowing more habitat for breeding birds. That's really awesome. And so how big an area are we talking about? Is it like 5 acres or 10, or what are we talking about? Do you know?
The burn units go from about, so we're looking at like 9 acres, 10, mm-hmm. Around 10 acres for this first go around. I believe this summer, the one will be around 30 acres. And, we do have lined up other areas that we hope to be able to burn in the future as well. And I believe the largest burn unit is around 60 acres.
Wow. Yeah, I was in a seminar that the Amamutsun were putting on, and basically they were saying, if you took a 100 acre spot, you would divide it into a couple of different segments, and you'd burn one segment one year, another segment the next, another the third, and so forth, because after the first burn, you have certain augmented species that suddenly are available to you. And then after the second year, you have, like, in this particular case, I'm thinking hazelnut trees, but that may not be around here. But the point was that you have materials that could be used for, in a way, tools or baskets or art. And, you know, it went on like that. There were different foods that were available after 3 years, and there were other things available after 4 years. So by doing this sort of rotation of burning, in this wide swath of land, they had all these different things available to them. And in the process, they were enhancing the numbers of elk and deer and just opening things up so that the things that required sun or a savanna or, you know, a broad sunlit area were enhanced. And I guess that's one of the things that, you know, we didn't realize, that being in a very, very dark and crowded forest isn't natural. It isn't the way things are best for the species involved, which is really interesting. So, yeah, I think it's a great project. And I'm hoping, I mean, it sounds like it's going to do a lot of good, which is wonderful. So are there other species or other advantages to this that you think can happen for the soil or for the birds or for other species?
Yeah, yes. So, you know, when we were thinking about this prescribed fire endeavor as a group, and, you know, we had set out a number of goals that we were hoping that this would help us achieve, right? And so these goals can be thought of as benefits that we're hoping for, right? So including reduced fuel loads, right? To help minimize risk for future wildfires.
That's major.
Yeah, so that's a big one. You know, this maintenance of the grassland habitat, right? So minimizing woody encroachment so that we can maintain grasslands as part of this really important component of the landscape mosaic. Mm-hmm. You know, the hope is to be able to promote native plant diversity. You know, a lot of wildflowers in the region flourish after after fire. And so this can help to promote those wild flowers. There's also, you know, the evidence that forage quality and sometimes even production of forage can be improved through stimulation of things like nutrient cycling and stuff. And so there's sort of a livestock management component there where we're hoping for improved feed quantity and quality. And then, you know, in terms of wildlife, there's a lot of organisms who depend on these habitats, right? And grasslands in particular in the region, and, you know, some of the birds that we talked about, but also, you know, you have badgers, for instance.
Really? Do we have badgers? I don't think I've ever seen a badger.
There are badgers. Yeah. Wow. There are badgers in the region.
Wow.
And so that's, you know, so it's maintaining habitat for the badgers and burrowing owls, right? White-tailed kites and northern harriers, these, you know, and so there's benefits there. And then I would, you know, add that I think people are increasingly thinking about the ability for prescribed fires to help reduce the risk of large carbon losses that are related to these wildfires we've seen. So if we can prevent these large wildfires that we know release a lot of carbon back into the atmosphere, if we can sort of reduce the risk of those, then we can potentially sort of offset some of those carbon losses as well that we experience from those.
You know, that's not something I would have thought of. That's not intuitively obvious, but really when you think about it, an 83,000 acre fire that we just experienced that went all the way from a skyline all the way down to Lake Felton and below, and it was all the way up to Butno Ridge along Lomamar and the back of Butno Canyon. Yeah, it was just tremendous. And when you think about how much smoke and how much carbon that is, you're right. It's just so much. So you're saying by having prescribed burns, you're actually kind of rationing that. You're making it much more controllable, much smaller amounts, which I hadn't really thought about. That's a great idea. That's a great benefit that I hadn't considered. And I love the idea that there's badgers. I had no idea. So this actually helps burrowing animals. I've seen a lot of northern harriers. They're just amazing. I didn't know that they burrowed. Do they actually burrow in the
No,
ground?
not the northern harriers, no, but the badgers for definitely, and then we have burrowing owls as well.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Burrowing owls. Yeah,
Yeah.
that sounds very cool.
Yeah.
Well, and then as far as burrowing things are concerned, it's just more habitat for all those mice and voles and moles and all those things that we have that just feed the raptors, right? So,
That's right.
which is they're an amazing thing too.
Yeah.
Well, so I see a lot of benefits there. And I guess from the standpoint of the climate, you're saying it really reduces the, those major catastrophes of wildfires, which is the first and foremost reason to do it. But there are so many other things that it sounds like it helps with, which is really awesome. So, how long have you been doing this, Chelsea? And are you working in other prescribed burns for other large landowners, or is this a unique project to you?
So I've been with Point Blue for gosh, 4 years now. This is my first experience in this job working with prescribed fire. When I was my sort of leap into the conservation world after undergrad, I worked at a land trust just outside of Chicago, which is where I'm from. And I had the opportunity there to work with the land management team where we to do some prescribed burns for the remaining tall grass prairie sort of patches we had in the region. And it was just really commonplace. I tell this story about how we were I just remember this vividly. We were in, I mean, it must have just been a couple of acres, patch of prairie that was surrounded, I mean, immediately surrounded by homes. And we were just out there, doing what we were doing with the prescribed fire, and that was really common. And so since being in California, and working in this job, this is sort of my first re-entry into the prescribed burning world, but we do have a lot of other staff members who also who work a lot with fires in general. So we have a lot of staff who work in the Sierras, and they study the response of birds to fire in the Sierras. In our working lands group, we have staff members who are in a cost share program with the Natural Resource Conservation Service. And so they live and work throughout the state in various regions. And so in those roles, they're working with producers to implement conservation practices, do conservation planning, and more helping with things like post-fire recovery, but also mitigation efforts, including prescribed fire. And so we do have staff members throughout the state who are helping to get prescribed fire on the ground as well.
Oh, that's great. So, yeah, it is. It sounds like a lot of people are suddenly realizing, hey, we really have to manage the land and prevent these wildfires, but also it has these huge benefits. It's really kind of amazing from literally the ground up, right? So it's improving the soil, it's improving the grass, it's improving the habitat for all these different species from the ground up. So it sounds like a very rewarding kind of a job. And so what I heard from Sarah in terms of what the goals for CAL FIRE was that they're hoping to get the word out. They're hoping that a lot of large landowners will jump on the bandwagon that Tomcat is on and cooperate with them in regard to these prescribed burns to prevent wildfires. And part of it is because they have a goal of burning 100,000 acres a year, according to her. And that's going to take a lot of people, I think. That's going to take a lot of landowners, and also, probably, state parks and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's awesome what you're doing, Chelsea. I appreciate, the information. Is there something else you'd like to add?
Yeah, I think I'll just say, you know, part of the, you know, the mission of Tomcat is this, you know, is to be this living learning laboratory. And so we've, you know, and part of that is through collecting data and sort of demonstrating the benefits, but, you know, capturing, you know, everything else in terms of relating to practices, whether it be grazing and now, you know, soil amendments and now moving into this prescribed burn territory. And so we will be taking sort of an approach to this prescribed burn that we have for other land management practices at Tomcat, which will include, you know, a decent amount of ecological monitoring, right? Because while there's many documented benefits of prescribed burns, right, there is variability in results, right? And in the end, you know, we want to be able to track and document and then tell the story of what we're learning in a way that that is demonstrable. And so we have monitoring points in some of these areas, these burn units, that we've been looking at soils and plants and birds since 2014. So going on, you know, gosh,
6 years, right?
Yeah.
7 years, maybe.
7 years.
Yeah.
And so we'll be able to, we just did some monitoring of them right now. And so we'll have this, you know, all this pre-fire data, we'll be able to capture it post-fire. And then, you know, add on some additional monitoring, you know, comparing burn versus unburned sites. And there's all sorts of possibilities, but that is really, I think, central to a lot of this too, is sort of being able to understand the benefits and any trade-offs that may exist and be able to communicate that in a way that, can inspire, you know, help inspire and others, you know, to right. similar kinds of actions and help them be successful.
Well, and also having that data, you know, it's just so impactful to be able to say, hey, here's the proof. You know, we did it this way for hundreds of years and it wound up with these wildfires. And now we're doing it this other managed way. And it's extremely helpful. And I think that one of the things that we're all coming to, I think, is that managing the land is so much more beneficial than letting it just fall apart, essentially. So yeah, it's I think that's great, and I'm so glad that Tomcat Ranch is doing that. You know, it's wonderful to have such a thoughtful, generous, kind of wise land management in our community, and it's an example for a lot of other people. So I think it's really cool. And so Chelsea, tell me a little bit about yourself. You said you've been doing this with Point Blue for 4 years. And then, so what was your background? How did you get into this?
Yeah. So I was born and raised in Chicago, and I got my undergrad from DePaul University in biology and environmental science. And like I said, I spent a year at a land trust in the Chicago region after undergrad. And then, you know, in my time, as an undergraduate student, I actually like really grew to appreciate and love soils. That's when sort of my love and appreciation sparked. Before that, I wanted to work with like big cats in Africa. but really, I sort of have always had this drive to, you know, it sounds silly, but to help save the world. And it's right. sort of evolved over time what that looked like for me. But when I sort of discovered the world of soils, I realized that was sort of where I wanted to make my impact. And so I ended up going to grad school, studying soils, soil nutrient cycling and soil microbial communities at the University of California, Merced, actually with Steve Hart, who's a really awesome soil ecologist there. Uh-huh. And so I spent 5 years in the Central Valley studying nutrient cycling and microbial communities of grasslands in the Central Valley.
I think that's so fascinating. I have read a little bit about that and how there are communities in the soil, as you put it. You know, it's like they're communicating with each other and passing on information about pests and things that are that they are all attacking together and things like that. It's like there's a little consciousness in that soil. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that out loud, but
it's truly remarkable. I mean, they, you know, in a handful of soil, you have more organisms than there are people on the entire planet. And like all of these, and there's more diversity, there's more kinds of organisms than you have, like, you know, bird species across California, and maybe even plant species across California. I mean, it's just tremendous, the diversity. And all of these organisms, you know, they're making a living, right? Yeah. You know, and as they make their living, a lot of them are doing really, really beneficial things for us, you know, unbeknownst to most of us. And so, you know, they're helping to regulate the climate. They help plants to thrive. They help ensure that we have clean water. They're doing all sorts of services as they're trying to just make their living that really benefit us and all of the things that we rely on. It's fascinating. And
it does sound inspiring to you. I can tell that you're passionate about it, and that's awesome. You know, and we find out these things about species without, you know, I was a biology major too long ago to have learned about all these things, but you know, that they are learning more and more about how, for example, a forest is an organism, and the mushrooms and the microbes and everything's interacting with each other in a way that makes it work together and a healthy environment. So the fact that it's helping the planet, that, you know, overall, I think that's amazing. I think that is really cool, that healthy soil is something that's healthy for the whole world. That's very cool. So are you doing what you want to do? I mean, is doing prescribed burns what you want to be doing, or are you wanting to sort of pick up soil and run it through your hands? Or
I think this is exactly what I want to be doing. You know, the cool thing about working at Point Blue and working with people, you know, organizations and people like Tomcat, is that you really get to do, you know, I'm a scientist, so I feel like I get to do science in service of stewardship and informed by stewardship. Right. So it's a two-way street. Mm-hmm. And in that way I get, you know, I feel like I'm really able to contribute to making, hopefully a meaningful impact, right. On ecosystems and the communities that rely on them. And,
I think that's what we hope for, right? We want to make a meaningful impact. We want to want to do some good. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's
really cool. And you know, and I learn from, you know, I work with a lot of amazing bird ecologists, and I've learned so much. I mean, this job challenges me to explore areas of ecology that I might not otherwise have really rolled my sleeves up and gotten into in a in a way. And I think that there's really something something fun and refreshing in that as well. So
that's awesome. And you know, when you're working with a whole bunch of passionate people who really care about saving the planet in their specific specialty, it is a really cohesive kind of a group, and you realize together you're really doing a lot of good, which is wonderful. I'm excited about soil all of a sudden.
Well, this has definitely been a success.
Microbes, you know, there you go.
That's right. Well, we have put together, I'll have to share it with you, Mel Preston, who's the on-site ecologist at Tomcat. Actually, she's a fantastic artist, and we were able to put together a guide for all of the below ground ecology in California that supports our rangelands. And it's an illustrated guide by Mel, and I wrote the text. And so I'll have to share one of those with you. And then Mel also has a companion resource about the plants of on the San Mateo coast that's all illustrated by her as well, the plants you'd find on rangelands. And so we'll have to get those over to you.
Oh, I would love that. Thank you so much. I would definitely love that. That's awesome. Yeah. And I think, you know, there's a lot of people around here very interested in mushrooms, and mushrooms are another thing that, you know, that help everybody and seem to communicate to trees. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And you know that work that we were talking about at the beginning with the micro-remediation is an interesting one. You know, there's one part of me that is cautious about moving new species around. You know, we've learned our lesson in many cases with
Oh.
introducing species. You know, there are also, I think, lots of reasons to expect that introducing, you know, particular fungi with wattles, for instance, post-fire could have the benefits or reap the benefits that we would want. And so I think there's a lot to learn there, but I think it's also really exciting that people are looking towards these organisms to help us in recognizing their importance in recovery of you know, these ecosystems post-fire.
Right. We really need to know all of it, all the strategies for mitigation, especially for the people who, like I interviewed somebody whose house burned down, and she's got, she really has a very practical need to restore the soil around where she had her garden and everything so that she can live there again. So, yeah, there's very practical applications to all of this. It's fascinating. And what's even better is it really can benefit all of us in so many ways. So,
Absolutely. So as I think, hopefully we're all recognizing at this point that fire, it's a foundational ecological process, right? It's helped to shape California over millennia. Our ecosystems, they've evolved with and in many cases are adapted to fire. But the effects of fire on the ecosystem, like soils, the plants and animals who live in them, they're going to depend on the fire characteristics, among other things. Right, so things like when the fire is happening, how hot or severe is the fire? Is it burning the canopy or is it a surface fire? Things like that, right? They're going to influence what the effects of that fire are. And so many of these recent wildfires, they've been very large. They've, you know, in some cases they move fast. They can burn, they tend to burn a lot hotter or through the canopy. They've been consuming man-made structures like homes and cars, which can create toxic effluents. That can sort of seep into our ecosystems. And, you know, and so in these ways, the wildfires have, you know, often been, and they're not always, but often been a little bit more ecologically severe, I would say. And so when we talk about the adverse effects of recent wildfires, and, you know, we've been talking some about the need for post-fire recovery efforts. We touched on, you know, the landslides down south. It's often because of these characteristics, right? If that makes sense. But then when, you know, on the flip side, we're talking about the benefits of prescribed fires. And when we're putting these prescribed fires on the ground, heat, you know, at Tomcat and elsewhere, you know, the intent is to have these fires burn at lower flame heights. They're not going to be as hot or go through the canopy. You know, we touched on how they cover relatively small areas. So you get this sort of mosaic effect. They're certainly not going to burn structures. And so, by controlling all of these aspects of or characteristics of fire, right, the hope is that with these prescribed burns, we're able to maximize the benefits of this process for these fire adapted systems, right? All the things we talked about for wildlife, keeping open grasslands as part of the diverse landscape, encouraging native plant diversity. These kinds of things, while minimizing harm that might come from, you know, a fire that is more severe or a fire that is really large in scale and those sorts of things.
my guest today has been Chelsea Carey, a soils ecologist who is helping Tomcat create the prescribed burns that it intends to have over the next spring and summer. And she's describing all of the benefits to the ecosystem, to the atmosphere, to our well-being in the process. So it has been a great joy to have her as our guest here on Coastside Conversations, and we will talk again soon.